All right. Hey there, this is Bram Kanstein and you're listening to Bitcoin for Millennials. With my guests on this podcast, I go on a journey to discover how our current financial system works, why it's flawed, and why Bitcoin is the most relevant technological discovery you should understand and adopt. In this episode, I'm joined by Ella Huff. She's a junior at Cornell University, pursuing a Bitcoin-focused study through Cornell's Scholar Degree Program. In addition, Ella is also the founder of the Cornell Bitcoin Club, project lead at the nonprofit organization Generation Bitcoin, co-founder of the Bitcoin Students Network, and a contributor to Bitcoin Magazine. Through her involvement, she's dedicated to helping young generations learn about and contribute to Bitcoin. And I'm super excited to talk with her today. So welcome, Ella.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. I loved writing this intro. I mean, you're doing so much. And we just talked off mic, like, sometimes I feel old, even as a millennial. I mean, I'm 36, but you're 21 and your involvement in Bitcoin is so big. So I'm super excited to talk with you because I think it's just really cool that, you know, like someone from a younger generation is all into this. And so let's talk about that. But first, I wanted to check with you. I saw your Twitter bio says Generation Z marks the end of the alphabet and beginning of the future, where the B of beginning is a Bitcoin B. So how do you experience talking about Bitcoin with your generational peers? Like what are the 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds talking about?
Yeah, so normally I just start by listening. I just kind of, you know, in my closer friend circle, I know what they're interested, I know what they're concerned about, thinking about. So yeah, normally I just listen and see, okay, you know, what might resonate with them. I have a friend, you know, a lot of her family is from Russia. And so sometimes we more so talk about the ability to, you know, have money that can't be taken from you, or it really kind of varies a little bit. Sometimes it's just sharing history. Like I think at least in my journey of coming to learn about Bitcoin and understand Bitcoin, I just didn't know what questions to ask. I just didn't even know what I should be thinking about. And so sharing some history that might come up. But if I had to give like, you know, one sentence that is sort of, I think, resonates with pretty much everybody, and I can't take credit from it for this sentence, Saifedean Ammou said it, but Bitcoin, and I'm paraphrasing, but Bitcoin is a tool to earn your wealth once instead of twice. And so, you know, when I'm talking to my peers, we're all in college, starting, getting our first job, starting to think about how are we going to take care of ourselves. Not many people are against, yeah, I'm on board with earning my money once instead of working to earn it again. So sometimes that's just a good hook as like a conversation starter to start thinking about. And I also really emphasize, you know, you don't have to change whatever you're interested in to be interested in Bitcoin. Like, because it's, you know, my personal life, this is very Bitcoin, which is my choice. It's how I want to spend my time and energy. But I just preface, you know, keep your interest what you're interested in. You know, you don't need to change that to be interested in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's also the entire point, right? I think if we talk about the problems that fiat money gives us, is that people are doing things to earn money that they don't enjoy doing, right? And because they are forced to do them instead of being able to create time to explore what they actually want to do, right? So I think that's a great angle. So do you think like the topic of money is a big thing, or like how do people end up thinking about Bitcoin or asking you about Bitcoin? Like what are kind of like the angles where they discover it or start thinking about it?
Yeah, I think it's hugely also dependent on where you are in the world. If you've grown up experiencing financial privilege, to use Alex Gladstein's term, or if you have not. And so that's just one right off kind of early on that you encounter. Normally in class, I focus on Bitcoin. A lot of research topics in different classes. It's kind of inevitable to talk about it. And the other day we had the program I'm in at Cornell called the College Scholar Program. We're all going around sharing our abstracts for our proposals, for our thesis that we'll write. And then they get to mine and everyone starts laughing. People are like, I have no idea what Bitcoin is, but this sounds so interesting. And so, yeah, it's not, I wish I had a better, more definite answer of what's the angle people are interested in. I think it's just, you know, what's your background, your story? What are you interested in currently? Like, maybe if you're a communications major, all the misinformation, maybe that's interesting to you. And like a new case study. Maybe you're, you know, in CS and you're interested in kind of like building on Lightning or whatever it might be, Bitcoin Core. Maybe, you know, one project in this program, they're focused on renewable energy. And so for them, like maybe it's the Bitcoin mining. So it's a variety. And I think that's a huge gift. It's not one size fits all. It's just, you know, any person can study the aspect that resonates with them.
Yeah. So lots of people have comments on millennials. You know, we are the trophy generation. We got trophies for participating and stuff. But I think like on Gen Z, there's even more like comments and, well, let's call them preconceptions. But I kind of like see, like from my point of view, I kind of see like two sides of Gen Z kind of like extrapolated. Like they either have a very like nihilistic worldview, you know, it's all going to shit and it's not going to work out. And how does my future look like? And will the world still exist? And like, you know, all these things, like, or they have a very optimistic worldview, you know, and I lean towards the optimistic also because I think, you know, even more than like the millennial generation who got into internet like at 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 ish, like you grew up with the internet, you already have like all the information of the world at your fingertips, right? So how do you look towards the future and what do you see your generation contribute to the world?
I mean, I think I would follow you in that I look at the world with a very optimistic outlook. I think, you know, I look, like go back to why I have Gen Z is the beginning, end of the alphabet, beginning of the future. Like this is the world that we're going to inherit. These problems are our problems that we need to, you know, figure out and solve. And so, but I mean, I also know that from what I see on Twitter sometimes, like the videos of people complaining on TikTok or whatever. And so I guess that's kind of one side that you're mentioning. But in my daily life, what I see is I see like the library full of people working. I see friends, you know, staying up till 2 a.m. working, like people exerting energy to do good, to try to contribute to society. So I guess I would just take the optimistic view and very, I guess, bullish on my generation that we are not just going to say, oh, you know, forget it. Like, that we are going to take action and, you know, work to build a better future.
Yeah. So do you think, I think like every generation points at the previous generation, right? Like how what is your feeling there? Like, if, you know, if you follow the optimistic peers, like, you know, when you talk about inheriting the world, like it is, like, is there a lot of finger pointing or do you think people feel empowered to figure it out?
I mean, I think finger pointing is just a waste of time. Like, I personally wouldn't do it. Again, with the history, like, most people do not know that the dollar's lost 98% of its purchasing power since 1971. They're not saying, like, I know I've never heard one of my friends say, oh, Nixon, like, you shouldn't have done that, whatever. Yeah. I think just finger pointing's not effective. Like, let's just spend our time and energy doing something productive. And maybe you're like, spend a lot of time going down the wrong path. Like, maybe the solution you think will work doesn't. But I just generally see people trying to put their energy to do something good, not just like sitting and finger pointing on the whole.
Hey there, I want to ask you for a quick favor. I noticed something interesting. 75% of my viewers aren't subscribed yet. Subscribing helps me grow this channel, ensuring more great content each week. So if you're enjoying our conversations on Bitcoin for Millennials, please consider hitting the subscribe button on YouTube or the follow button on your favorite podcasting app. I'm super grateful for everyone who already joined and shared their thoughts. Your feedback really keeps me going. And I want to ask you to continue doing that. I try to respond to all the comments and also the emails that I get. And DMs on Twitter, etc. So don't stop doing that. I'll keep going. Now let's get back to the conversation. I recorded an episode with your mother, Lisa. And yeah. For our listeners, check out episode 30. She's obviously super orange-pilled now. But and I'm assuming you talk about Bitcoin with her a lot. But what was her influence on you when, you know, when you grew up, when it came to like learning about money, finance, and economics? Like, how did you get into these topics?
Yeah, so I think it's always helpful to kind of, you know, with time you can reflect back and see what are the little, I call them like dots that you collected that now you can connect. And so I remember, I maybe was in sixth grade, maybe honestly, probably earlier than that, maybe fourth grade, very young. And we were at dinner, we're talking about what I'm going to study in college. And I made some comment along the lines of, oh, well, you know, I don't want to do something just for the sake of money. I want to do something that I enjoy. And my mom was like, no, no. you know, it is expensive to just go outside and breathe. And so we sat down and made a spreadsheet of, you know, we looked up like, okay, what major are you kind of interested in? And I loved history. I still love history. And so we're like, okay, what's the average starting salary of a history major? Where do you want to live? You know, how much are utilities, internet, like everything? And the math just doesn't work. Or it didn't work in that sense. So I'd say that was probably one of the first moments when I really started talking about money. And also say my parents always, I didn't have a kid's table. Like I was a part of every conversation, whether I understood what was going on or not. And so then when it came time to apply to colleges, I was applying kind of CS. And prior to that, now we're going to jump to high school, is when my mom and I both started learning about Bitcoin, different avenues, but pretty much the same time. And my high school I was at, there was this program called the Technology, Innovation, and Entrepreneurship Program. And to fulfill that program, you did it the whole years you were there. You had to take certain courses. So I selected the innovation strand. And one of the courses was called blockchain. That was it. And so that was really when I say I first learned about Bitcoin, but purely learned it just as distributed ledger, technology, supply chain, use cases. And I thought, okay, you know, that's cool, but not for me. I'm really interested in AI and AI ethics. And at the same time, my mom, I think, was reading like the MIT Tech Review, and they had something on blockchain. And so she was just, I think we're both very curious. She was just learning, okay, you know, what is this? We took the like Gary Gensler Blockchain and Money MIT open courseware together.
It's pretty good, actually. I did it too, right?
Yeah. And so that was really at the beginning. And she definitely fell down the rabbit hole first. But then we both went to the Oslo Freedom Forum in, I think it was like June 2022. And that is the moment for me where I say I really feel like I discovered Bitcoin, appreciated Bitcoin, and on the plane ride back was really like when I started going down the rabbit hole, when I got back, read the US budget, or just like, what is going on in this world? So we had separate but together paths. And now it's, you know, such a gift to be able to talk about this with her and you know, be in community with other Bitcoiners as well.
Yeah. So what were the elements of Bitcoin that made up your aha moment? What made it click?
Yeah. So, there's a lot, I think it's a lot of different things building up on it. Okay. I mentioned like the blockchain course, also Freedom Forum, just it's really embarrassing to admit, but I had such immense financial privilege. I did not really know the concept of what that you can just be debanked, or, you know, how money can really be a tool, to take away the rights of humans. And so that was a huge one. I had also taken a course on creativity, and you had to study a creator and just think about, you know, think about things differently. and, you know, what could be next. Ask questions, don't just take established truths. And so I had all these little touch points. And then the more you learn about Bitcoin and you learn about it as a tool, you know, privacy protecting freedom technology, you learn about proof of work. You know, that's how our society works. Like, I'm not going to graduate from college because of proof of stake. No, I have to go do my work. Yeah. Low time preference, delayed gratification, all of that really just was like, yes, this makes sense. This money system that we have before, none of that makes sense like Bitcoin does. And there were some, you know, logical tidbits that you learn, which is, of course, that's obvious. So many things all contributing.
So I can imagine that, and maybe also because you are younger, like there are just some things that you just find very logical about Bitcoin. You know, like why would a money system work, you know, anyway else?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there some things that you can elaborate on? I mean, what I love about, you know, doing the podcast also. Mm-hmm. So again, I talked with your mom. I talked with, you know, fellow millennials, but also to some boomers, right? Like everyone has something that they have to kind of change, right? Like things they thought were true or that they believed in a certain way or a worldview, right? And I feel like the younger you get, the more logical Bitcoin sounds, but you were the perfect person to ask. So,
yeah, I would say I have a couple of different things and analogies I always find super helpful. So I kind of frame them in that sense. The first one being, you know, when you're little, I don't know if maybe you did this too, but you have like a piggy bank for your allowance. If you know, you do chores, maybe you get a small allowance. And so just the concept of when you're so young, well, you're custodying your wealth. You're, you know, little, but you're taking on the responsibility of custodying your economic energy, your time, your wealth. And then I remember being so excited when I was, I don't know, 13, 14, whatever, and I was old enough to go and get a bank account. Why was I so excited to just hand over all of my
That's a good point.
Wealth? That's one. I think the idea of owning the same slice of something for forever, like there's 21 million Bitcoin, whatever, however many sats you have, you know, you will always have that percent of the 21 million. And then the idea, this is kind of another analogy, but, and I can't take credit for it, but we have a standard measure of time in the world. And so if money is supposed to be how we can express our preferences and value, and we have no standard unit of measurement for value. So to kind of unpack that a little bit, like, you know, you have 60 seconds in your minute, I have 60 seconds in my minute. And if we didn't have that, our world would be so chaotic. It would be hard to get anything done. But that's the reality in money. There's, you know, 180 different fiat currencies, you know, whatever the precise number is. We have no standard unit of measurement for value, and that creates a lot of friction. And you know, add in exchange rates and that the currencies themselves are changing. And so, you know, Bitcoin is just this neutral, you know, arbiter of preference of value that's accessible to all 8 billion people equitably. Just, yes, that makes sense to me.
I love these two things, like especially the last one. I think is great. Let's touch upon that. But the first one, like giving money to the bank, you know, it's this is a great example. I'm gonna keep this in mind because this is the thing, right? Like, I talk a lot about, you know, if you know how the banking system works, right? So that takes some studying, right? It's just so fascinating that you basically like outsource your own responsibility over your own life, right? You outsource the responsibility over your own life to an organization also just made up of individual people that you couldn't name and that don't care that, you know, I'm me and you are you. And, you know, that piggy bank is something you hold on to for dear life when you're younger. And my 6-year-old son also has like this little wallet with his money. And, you know, that's like really his thing. Sometimes he asks me, where's my money? And then I say, well, it's here in the drawer, right? And like, how do we get to a point where we just give it away? This is pretty astonishing,
actually.
I was excited
to do it. I'm so excited.
Also, yeah, that's wild. But did they give you like a promotion offer? Like, did they give you something?
No, it wasn't like a credit card or anything. It was just like, I don't know. I remember I went to the bank and like, I'd take like when I would scoop ice cream and I'd go and I'd get the little piece of paper that then you can roll the coins up, you know, like from tips. And yeah. I was just like, oh, this is so fun. And I don't know why I really enjoyed doing this, but I was like, okay, I'm going to roll up my quarters and my pennies and then I'm going to go deposit it in the bank. And I don't know. I think it's just something like, well, this is the default of how society works, and you are excited to participate and feel like a grown up and adult. I don't know. That was probably more that than
something
promotional.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because in my country, there's like these children accounts, right? And they do like promotions. You get like a little cash register for at home or like something with soccer or I don't know. But now that you mentioned this, like, it's so interesting that. You know, nobody really asks the question, what is money or how does a bank work, etc. Because it's like this, how do you say this? Like it's like a construct in a sense, right? Like this is what you do or something, but you never question it. I think this is also one of the things why when you're older and then you discover Bitcoin and how banking works and all these things, like it's just way harder to accept that you were kind of like lured into this unconsciously, like without knowing how it works. Fascinating. So how do you, well, maybe back to like also your peers, like do they think about this? Like do they understand that the banking system is not designed to work for you as an individual?
So I would have probably had a different answer up until yesterday morning. I think on the whole, people don't realize, you know, the intricacies of the banking system. I certainly don't know all of the intricacies of the banking system. But I was sitting in a class yesterday, and it's a kind of like a network C algorithms market auction class. And they were talking about bonds. And anyways, they brought up the Fed reserve rate. And I can't remember exactly the framing of it, but one guy raised his hand. He was like, well, how is this impacted given that during COVID, the reserve rate went from, you know, whatever, 10% to 0%, and they haven't, you know, brought it back since COVID. How does this change? And so I didn't really think many other people were thinking about that besides me before. And then I'll also add, so as you mentioned, this semester I started the Cornell Bitcoin Club, and I, you know, when I set out to do it, I was like, you know, this is worthwhile to do if it's just me and one other person. You know, you have to have 10. So I knew I had like 10 people to do this with. But now we have 65 people on the mailing list. And so I think I'm consistently really pleasantly surprised and grateful how many people, you know, are beginning to think about money and about systems that exist outside of the current system.
Yeah. Wow, that's super hopeful to hear, actually.
And this is why I'm optimistic. And I think it's more productive to be optimistic and not just, you know, sit back and someone else will fix it. And just know, like, whoever you are, whatever, you know, you want to do, like, you can contribute. And I think that's really empowering.
Yeah. So the other thing you mentioned, the standard measure of value, for me, that's also, it's such a logical thing, right? Because it should exist. That would actually enable global trade, right? But the fact that it doesn't exist, how many fiat currencies are there? You said 180?
It's like 180.
That is like a war by itself, right? Just the currency wars against each other. Like if my currency in my country is stronger than in your country, like I can persuade people to adopt my currency and then I undermine yours and then I slowly take over your trade, right? Stuff like this sounds so simple. Obviously, it's very complex because we live in a world where this is like going on. Right. Mm-hmm. But the standard measure of value, just makes so much sense, right? Because it also shouldn't really matter. You know, it, practically it doesn't work like this, but you know, if I need someone to do something for me, whether they are from my country or your country or Nigeria or Italy, shouldn't really matter, right? So even if they would come over and provide a service or build a product for me, we should be able to award people in the same way all over the world. And we have a measure for time. We have a measure for distance, although in America that's also different.
We switched. I don't know why.
But the standard measure for value, it makes so much sense because at the root it's just energy expenditure, right? Mm-hmm. From whoever creates a product or a service, it's energy expenditure in a certain amount of time, and that's the same for everyone. So why is the reward different? Yeah, that's a great one. I'm gonna read up on that more because perhaps we should start like a petition. We should start something to create a standard measure of value. But this angle of Bitcoin, I think, is really interesting, right? Because I think also because people have these conceptions or beliefs about money or banking or value or wealth or all these things, right? I think that's why it's also very hard to actually understand Bitcoin, because you have all these different dimensions and things you have to challenge personally before you understand it. But if we talk about the standard measure of value without mentioning Bitcoin, it could be a nice explanation for eventually we would mention Bitcoin, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think it would be like a good angle for a conversation starter, right? I think I saw a tweet today by I think it's the Bitwise CEO. Is that Matt Hoogan? No, I think so.
Hunter. I can't remember their titles. Yeah.
And he talks about, you know, the comparison to calling Bitcoin digital gold is kind of undermining what Bitcoin actually is, right? It's illustrating it because people can kind of relate to it. But at the same time, it's also undermining it a bit.
I think I saw that as well in the comments, or maybe that was in it. It was like, well, you know, people don't use gold that much. Like, it was like, if you're saying, oh, it's just digital gold, well, then if I'm remembering someone wrote this gold, basically like you're kind of short what we could be.
Well, it's only if you take certain types of properties from Bitcoin, right? But I replied below it like, it is time, and then I mentioned a clip from the presentation of Michael Saylor this week where he talks about this, right? Like, it is not gold, it's not a commodity, it's engineered scarcity, and the only thing that is scarce, really scarce, there's one thing, and that is time, right? There's multiple people that talk about Bitcoin as time, right? Like Gigi has articles about this. Well, and so, you know, if you walk that path, then you would end up at, you know, well, if we have a measurement for time, then Bitcoin could be the measurement for value, right? So, I love that. I love that angle. So how has Bitcoin changed your world for you? I mean, well, you went to the Oslo Freedom Forum two years ago or 18 months ago. Like, was that one of those? Well, you shared it was one of those moments, but like, how do you look at the world? You have this optimistic outlook, but what is your view of the world?
Well, I think I've also been very fortunate in that I am learning about Bitcoin so early. And that's why, you know, another reason why I really think it's important that people my age, younger, just learn about Bitcoin now. I've noticed there's a tendency to just push off kind of thinking about money, or, you know, I don't have time for that, just because of, it's like, we can't get out of the system that just does everything to keep us in it. And so I feel very grateful to have learned about Bitcoin now and it being really formative in my worldview or enhancing my worldview. You know, I have wonderful parents who I think really did a good job of, you know, teaching me about the world and how to act in the world. But learning about Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is money, and the concept that money is a tool to shape reality, and the reality we live in is one that has a lot of greed and dishonesty and then Bitcoin presenting itself as, okay, well, this is something that we could, a tool we can use to build a more honest future, a more honest reality. So that's, you know, one shape of my worldview. And then I think just on the, like, stepping back a little bit, it's really empowering to be a part of something so much bigger than yourself, and something that encourages you to think for yourself, and where it's a norm to, you know, don't trust, verify, do your proof of work, first principles thinking. And so it's almost like, you know, Bitcoin shapes my worldview or helps shape it, but also it's at the same time telling me, you know, you go shape your world for you. You go make a decision, have an opinion. And so that's an aspect that I appreciate, and another thing I try to share with friends. And yeah, so I think one final point I heard on a podcast a couple of months ago now, and they basically just said, you know, if you have life, you have purpose. Go find it. And so for me, I feel really grateful to have found Bitcoin and to be able to put my time and energy into this system. And something else I tell my friends though is, but that you don't have to choose to do that. Like, Bitcoin can just be money for you that allows you to save and then have the ability to choose and think and act in a way that aligns with your values. So I guess to put a bow on it, like, it's shaped my worldview and also taught me how to shape my worldview for myself.
I love that. I wish I would have that. I had that when I was 21. But I think that's great, right? Like, I love hearing this, because for me, this is also, I think, what strengthens my positive outlook for the future, right? Like, the fact that you can find your purpose at such a young age, that's amazing. Like, I love that you're sharing that, right? I had a conversation on another podcast with Luke Broyles about, like, trying to contribute to Bitcoin, as you mentioned also, you know, in whatever way. I mean, I just started another podcast, you know.
Oh my gosh.
But no, I mean this one, right? Like,
oh,
another
okay.
Another
I thought you were starting another podcast.
No, no. But like, the act of sharing is already the inspiration, yeah. I think, right? And it doesn't really matter what you do once you see that, you know, Bitcoin is something that could really change the world, then it doesn't really matter how you contribute, right? And even, you know, what you say to your friends, I think, right? Like, if they adopt it as their money or their way of saving their wealth or building their wealth towards the future, they are also contributing to Bitcoin, right? Because they're going to be users of it. So yeah, I love that explanation, because it's just, it doesn't really matter where you come from or what you do. Like, you can contribute in any way. And that also ties into, I think, some of the dimensions of Bitcoin, right? Like the permissionless aspect, or the trustless aspect, or the apolitical, a-religious, all these things. Like, it doesn't matter who you are and where you come from. Like, anyone can contribute to this. And so what you said about the honesty point, I really like that too, right? Because I think Bitcoin forces transparency. So it forces you to add value. And if you don't add enough value and people don't want to share their Bitcoin with you, then you should just go and do something else, right? Like, I think it's actually the perfect maybe cure for capitalism, in a sense that it would really work, right? Like, if you are better at baking cakes than I am, then, you know, I'm going to do something else and you win, and that's all good. Yeah, so I think that's a really nice point. So if we move on to what you're doing at Cornell, you are studying Bitcoin. How did you manage to get that through at a top university like Cornell? How did it go?
Yes, so it was a long process. I guess for an overview, it took about 15 months to do.
Wow.
And so I had spent my for some context, I spent my junior year of high school in Beijing until COVID broke out and we all had to go home. But I really wanted to go back after that happened. And so I spent my freshman year at NYU Shanghai, although that was all remote because of COVID again, because I did not get into Cornell initially. I received the transfer offer. So it was, you know, you can come as a sophomore, but not as a freshman. And so it was during, you know, that time that I was really down the like AI ethics, was really interested in Chinese and the characters, and you know, that's a whole nother topic, that I say, you know, all that to say, spending a lot of time at home, not on a campus, in that freshman year, I was able to think about Bitcoin and learn more about it. And then I went to the Oslo Freedom Forum that summer, right before I was going to Cornell. And then I got to Cornell and learned that they had an independent major program. I was like, I have to do Bitcoin. I have to figure out how to study this. And so I started it, you know, I think September, October, right when I got there. And it wasn't much success. It was a lot of, you know, we don't think it's a good idea for you to study something that's 14, 15 years old. We think you could really benefit from an established curriculum. How about you study the gold standard? Blockchain's the true innovation, not Bitcoin here. And I just kept persisting. I just took all the no's as not yet. And just because, you know, once you see Bitcoin, as people say, you can't unsee it. I was like, this is not something that I'm willing to give up trying to say that I think it's important that I spend my time doing this. So anyways, I spent the whole year doing that. I couldn't ever quite find a faculty to also serve as a sponsor for that major. And then circle around to the beginning of this year, I received a new academic advisor, and she graduated from Cornell. She's an alumna, and she did this program called the College Scholar Program. Now it's the Robert S. Harrison College Program. And she was telling me about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know I'm a year late in applying, but is there any way I can apply? I've been trying to do this independent major. I can't seem to get, you know, much traction on it. And she was like, oh, I don't know. Anyways, they let me apply during the exams of December, and then it was approved in January. So this program, it's a little bit more supportive, or maybe more established than the independent major program was. So I'm a big believer in things always work out. So right now I'm working on putting together my committee, or kind of my board, for my oral defense that I'll do next spring for the thesis that I'll write next year. And there's, you know, a couple classes that you take, and you're in a cohort. So there's about 60 people on campus all doing different things. And it's like, it's so energizing and hopeful for me, because I, you know, go to that seminar and I hear people talking about their ideas that like are so interesting. It's like, this is what education is supposed to be. Like, this is what sound money allows us to do. It's just go be curious, think differently. So anyways, my thesis right now, the title is kind of, what my Twitter handle, showing that the 21 million Bitcoin are tools for the 21st century. And I right now have honed it down to look at the economic, energy, and linguistics components, or to kind of prove that thesis from those angles. So yes, that will really all kick off next year. And then I have a couple other like minors, majors, but I get to choose all my courses, and it's really just your intellectual freedom.
Amazing. Amazing. So what is the linguistics aspect there?
Yes. And so this is the worst that I am. This is the one that I'm worst at saying concisely for this, because I'm still like going through this all in my head. So let me try it. And I could not sleep last night because I was thinking about this too. But essentially, you know, if money is how we express our preferences and values, and language, I took a class previously and it introduced the idea of the language game, and how just like you and I right now, we're playing a language game. You know, can I understand your meaning? Can you understand mine? And if we both can, then we've won. But if you think of just like a water bottle, like the bottleneck, it's really hard to get all the meaning that I want to share to you through that, and vice versa. So there's different tools and strategies that we enact. But the point is that, you know, then once you think about people who speak different language, it's just, it's hard just in spoken language to communicate our preferences. And so I took that class, I started thinking about Bitcoin, and well, okay, Bitcoin is this language in a sense that allows us to communicate with people worldwide and say, you know, I value your energy, who you are, what you do, in a way that we've never really been able to before. And so that's kind of one thought process of this. Another is just, you know, code being speech, language is power, you know, money is power.
Yeah.
Transactions, you have the linguistics component. And then the part I was thinking about last night, it's still like very rough, but just how words are a little bit like a safe, and you can see a word, you can see it, but you don't always know the meaning. Like it takes a lot of, you have to, you know, spend time to unlock that meaning. And so I was just thinking about like Bitcoin as a word, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. There's so much in all of that, that the more time you spend learning, you actually appreciate. Like the first time I heard electronic cash system, I had no idea the benefits of cash, of what you get when something's electronic. So anyways, that was a little bit jumbled, but I think
I'll flesh it out,
but I love thinking about this. And we'll maybe
for the first part, I'm thinking about what you said about someone in Bitcoin, maybe Breedlove probably, but like the money is also a tool for communication also, right? Like, as you said, the value exchange is I communicate to you, I can do XYZ for you, or I can you know, build or give you product ABC, whatever I created, right? And so I communicate what value I can bring to you, right? And my job is that to do that to the best of my ability, which basically starts with, you know, Ella, I understand the problem you have, and therefore this is my solution, right? And then when you are accepting that, that is when we basically shake hands and do this value exchange, right? And so I think that is a very clear form of communication, right? But then the technology we use to actually exchange the value, right? On one side, it's me expending my energy in a time to do the thing that I give to you, right? And on the other hand, other side, it's you using, well, fiat money to basically communicate back, you know, this is the value you deliver to me packaged in, you know, the money that we use. But because that money is corrupted, our communication gets corrupted. Maybe not at the moment when we shake hands and do the exchange, right? Because at that, you know, that moment in the now, you know, at that moment that we shake hands, it's equal. But after that, the reward that I got starts to deteriorate in value, right? And so therefore, at the moment of us communicating, our exchange got corrupted because, well, basically an external technology, that corrupted it, right? And so when you mention this, I think about Bitcoin is actually a tool that enables us to keep that value that we exchange, right? I give you a product or a service and you give me the reward in return. And that stays equal, you know? So it solves that corrupted communication. Well, that's kind of what I thought about.
No, I love that. Yeah. So that's probably the section that I am most interested in and the one that I am worst at expressing right now. If I don't write about something and like organize my ideas, I can't express it. But I think it's fascinating to think about.
Yeah. Well, I think this is part of the paradigm shift, because if we can have equal exchanges all the time with anyone, anywhere in the world, that's going to be a very positive game instead of a zero-sum game, right? That field enables. So yeah, to me, that's part of the paradigm in a sense, like that just shifts everything to a more positive world in a sense. All right, nice. So tell me about the Bitcoin Students Network, how that is going, and how anyone listening who is a student or not, I don't know, can contribute to the network and the nonprofit you're building.
Yes, well, anyone can contribute, not just students. So we launched the Bitcoin Students Network in March of this year. And the Students Network is an initiative of Generation Bitcoin, which is a nonprofit focused on providing, you know, education and job opportunities for, as the name would suggest, Generation Bitcoin, kind of the younger generations. And I did not found that. Arsh Malu, who works at the Human Rights Foundation, Ashana Mizra, who's the youngest Bitcoin core contributor, and Autumn Domingo, who is a freshman in college, and she's done a lot of Bitcoin UI UX work. They started it a couple years ago, and then I joined them a couple years ago as well. And Arsh and I co-founded the Bitcoin Students Network this year. And it has the, really the same missions, but a little bit more targeted of an audience. And so it's about the 18 to 22 year old range. You don't necessarily have to be a student in a university. But it is, the mission there is, how do we grow and scale Bitcoin clubs? And so there's kind of three different verticals of resources that we're putting together. So logistics. How do you start a Bitcoin club? What should you think about? What are best practices? Educational. It's really time consuming to, you know, run a meeting. And so we're building out a kind of repository of workshops. And then financial. Some universities give budgets to clubs, others don't. So we don't want that to be a hindrance. Also help students get to conferences or, you know, buy a book, something of that nature. And then another really huge piece that we're working on is the jobs front, because it's hard to say, you know, yes, I will spend my time thinking about Bitcoin or, you know, this, if you don't see any path for you to contribute or work on in the future, especially if you're in university where you're just so focused on, okay, well, what am I going to do to get my summer internship or whatever? Just having the jobs is a way to just build a more sustainable investigation and interest in Bitcoin. So right now we have about, we have kind of nodes in this network in about 26 different countries. So it's worldwide. It's not just the US. We have an incredible board of advisors. There's 12 of them across various different teams to help kind of support what our mission. And yes, if you are a student, please be in touch. We'd love to support you. Even if you're just one person, you know, right now, and you're interested in starting a Bitcoin club, we, like, there's been fun stories of, like, multiple people from the same university filling out our interest form and then, you know, kind of connect with them.
Nice.
Also, if you are an individual, you know, maybe you can go volunteer to give an hour lesson at your local university. Or if you're a company and you'd like to take on some interns or do a workshop or a panel, really anything you can contribute is most appreciative. And we'd be most grateful to chat.
Awesome. I will make sure to link to everything in the show notes so people can check it out. And well, hopefully some people are listening that could contribute. If I don't know if you're already in the Netherlands, but as mentioned before, I will definitely try to help you and connect with some universities here. So let's see if we can if we can make that work.
Yes.
All right. So, what advice would you give someone who is just starting to explore Bitcoin? You know, we mentioned the different dimensions that, you know, Bitcoin has. So, you know, it's I would say it's pretty daunting to get started. But what would be your advice?
Start. Just, you know, think about what are you interested in? Like, I don't know, maybe it's like gardening and then you're interested in the kind of the regenerative agriculture topic of Bitcoin. There's so much in this space.
Yeah.
So I would say just start. If you look, if you have a meetup, I think the community of Bitcoin it's really special. And I promise if you just go to a meetup, people will be so glad to meet and talk with you. And yeah, I mean, I think really just start, you know, listen to podcasts like yours. And then I'd also just to kind of give a framework, you've probably seen kind of like the graph where it's like, I know nothing on the, like the left side of the graph. And then
yeah,
the middle, you're
yeah.
I'm so smart. I know everything. And then, and time is on like the X-axis, I think.
Yeah.
And then on the right, you're back to, I know nothing. most days I feel like I know so little, but I take that as a gift, a privilege to just have something that makes me curious and teaches me. So just, you know, people that have been thinking about this for, you know, 4 years, 10 years, sometimes also feel like they know nothing. So focus on what you're interested in. Go find, you know, local Bitcoiners. And yeah, there's, you know, just start.
It's a good point about feeling I know nothing. I had the same when I watched this clip I just mentioned from Saylor, you know, or that presentation. It's again, I thought, you know, after 10 years, I know my stuff, but, you know, I have my mind blown every week, I think, still. But that's also the fun part, right? I think, you know, when you start, there's so much content, there's so many different voices from different backgrounds, talking also about all these different dimensions, right? So there is already so much for you to explore. And yeah, once you realize that, you know, how we communicate value with each other is probably the root of everything you would want to fix in the world that you don't like, you know, of which you don't like how it is right now, then the rabbit hole is probably endless in that way, right? Like the how we communicate value with each other is where all the problems come from. Yeah. And if we fix that, we really fix the world, right? So I think, yeah, well, perhaps it's less daunting. I think it's just more daunting because there is so much content, right? But it's just like, it doesn't, maybe the your answer is best, like it just start and it doesn't matter where you start because you will find these other dimensions.
Exactly. And I also, so at Bitblock Boom a couple weeks ago, Don Bay gave a good strategy that he does when he's maybe onboarding new groups, and they do an exercise like in the firehouse or wherever, and they put like $1 into Bitcoin, $2, and just like low stakes exercises. And this is, you know, I always tell people, you know, my intent is not for you to go buy Bitcoin. My intent is just for you to think about this. And so, but they just use like, okay, it's $2. Like, who cares if we mess this up? Who cares if, like, you know, this is turns wrong? It's just like, just start small. And, you know, it's also, you don't need to have some big expectation that Bitcoin's going to take over your life or that you're going to have to spend all your time doing this. Like, it can just be money. It can just be a vessel for you to save your energy for generations. And that's it. So just help.
Yeah, I agree. And probably once you start, you will find the rabbit hole if you pay. Yeah.
Once, once you're in.
You spend enough time and then you will think about it every day. Right. Yeah. So do you see Bitcoin as like a technological discovery or also as kind of like a philosophy?
Oh, does it ever have to choose one or these?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I definitely think it was a discovery as opposed to an invention. And I guess, well, maybe I might ask you more on the philosophy side of things. Like, I love the philosophical take on it. I just read Resistance Money, you know, written by three philosophers. And so I guess, you know, what is, how do you interpret Bitcoin being a philosophy?
For me, it kind of ties into the part that I just mentioned about, you know, the, and this is also what I learned along the way, you know, the real free market is I find you or you find me, and we agree that we want to have an exchange of value, whatever it is. And that should really be only up to us. And the fact that it is corrupted in a way that we don't understand, or, well, 99.9% of the people don't understand that unconsciously influences our life in the way that we spend our time, which is our most scarce asset, right? And I think that is limiting us in what we can do, right? As I mentioned in the beginning, like the fact that we don't have the space, again, that's time for me to figure out, you know, what am I here to contribute. I find that a really big thing. And It's funny because I only got there because I created the time to think about, you know, why don't people have the time? So it's interesting. But I think once you can control your time, like really control your time, that actually frees up your mind in a sense, because there's so many things in your mind that are there, not because you want to, but because there are third parties that create certain environments that force you to put those things in your head. So I think you're not really free, although, you know, we live in free countries and, you know, we have freedom of speech and blah, 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 but you're not really free. Mm-hmm. There's still other people that influence your life and not in a good way. And so, you know, once you understand that you can adopt a tool that can help you be more free, well, then, yeah, for me, that is kind of like the philosophy part in that way, that you can actually get there. Like there's a real chance that you can get there instead of just hoping for it
or,
you know, fantasizing about it in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think it goes back to what you said in the beginning, that we tend to outsource our agency and responsibility, and Bitcoin allows you to reclaim that.
Yeah. So, well, maybe this is a good one because I wanted to ask you what is like an interesting Bitcoin tweet or article? You know, this is something I want to introduce here in the podcast. Like I want to just gather content and then share it, you know, with the people listening. But like what's an interesting tweet, article, podcast, or video that you've come across that you love to share?
Yes, so Natalie Smolensky, I just hugely, you know, look up to her, respect her, and she had a tweet the other day. And it was basically just about the importance of maintaining integrity, like the road ahead of us. It's going to be hard. I might now be extrapolating, but it will be long. Like it won't be easy, but we really have to make sure that we are acting with integrity and staying true to sound values and not getting caught up in ego or high time preference. And I just, it really resonated with me. Earlier at the end of last year, I kind of saw something in my you know, immediate world where there, you know, a lack of integrity or, you know, where identity and expediency really had a bad impact. And so I just read this and it just resonated.
Yeah. So you send me the link. I'll look it up.
Oh, yeah. I'll
read it. Yeah, I got it. So she says, things are dark and they're going to get much darker. Our moral and intellectual North Star must remain functioning from principle instead of identity and expediency. Thinking and acting from principle is revolutionary. It transforms the world. Cheers to all fellow travelers on the road ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it ties a bit into what I just said. Like once you can, I don't know how it worked, but I think once you adopt Bitcoin, you adopt, I think, a certain trust in yourself that you can trust yourself and, you know, your own moral compass, and that you are right to a degree, you know, that you set out on a certain path and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that you see what can be what can be there as a reward of following that path, right? And then it doesn't really matter, you know, what the obstacles are that you that you come across, because you know that you are on your path in a sense. So I love that you shared that. Yeah,
and I think, you know, the future is just inherently uncertain, and I've realized that a tool or a framework to think about, well, how do you handle uncertainty, is just, what type of person do I want to be? What type of values do I want to embody? And when I learned about Bitcoin and the values we've spoken about, you know, it embodies the values that I'd want to express on my best day. And so, you know, that's a system that I want to put my energy into. And then I think, you know, as she kind of mentioned, and this is my interpretation as well, but we can't define all the steps ahead of time of what will get us to the right destination or how we should be moral. And that's different for everyone. But I think, you know, Bitcoin, just how it was constructed, the values it leaves us with, as you were speaking at, it helps us get to the right destination. Like if we just kind of, you know, put our time into it and, you know, try to act with the best and the most, you know, integrity, then we'll end up where we're supposed to be. And so, yeah, I read that and it really resonated.
It's funny because now that you say this, I think about the proof of work, do the work.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you can only do the work if you really integrate where you're going, right? Like if you anchor to that point on the horizon where you're going, then you are also motivated to do the work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So to end our conversation, I will ask you what I ask everyone at the end.
Okay.
And that's, what is a core belief you will never let go?
Yeah, mine's really short. Community is everything. Yeah.
Can you elaborate a bit?
Sure. I think it's just, you know, your community, small or large, it's, and I think, you know, I've learned to a certain extent what it's like to lose community, gain community, you know, be a good community member. I went to, I think, 7 different schools in 8 years. And so I was moving all the time and, you know, rebuilding community and finding your people again. And I also grew up and I never really had social media before Twitter. And so I think my mom taught me this thing where you just reach out to 2 people you don't normally speak to every week. And so as I'm going through these 7 different schools, 8 years, like you meet a lot of different people. And those people, just, I think, you know, the idea of dots again, just the people you're around, the people who are there for you, the people who you can support and celebrate and cheer on, like that's why we're here. You know, that's just for me what has felt centering or grounding, or just like, especially with Bitcoin, like we are here to support a mission that protects human flourishing and individual, you know, sovereignty for all 8 billion people. Like, it embodies community as everything and supporting our community members.
Love that. Great ending. Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. As mentioned, I will link to, you know, Generation Bitcoin, your students network, your Twitter, so people can follow your journey and hopefully also contribute to what you're building. So thanks so much. We'll be in touch. And say hi to your mom.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would be amazing if you could rate, review, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. It will help us educate more millennials on the importance of Bitcoin. You can follow and connect with me on Twitter. I'm Bramk. That's at BRAMK. And if you are or know someone who has an interesting perspective on Bitcoin that's worth sharing, hit me up. I read and reply to every single message. I appreciate your support and hope you'll be here for the next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.